You're listening to Clinical Conversations. I'm Joe Elia. In our last podcast, we interviewed Dr. Edward Alexander, who just published an editorial on the new sepsis definitions in JAMA. Just as that podcast was released, the journal Chest published an editorial dissent against the new definitions, warning that they could cost patient lives and that the editorialist couldn't support its adoption. The dissent came from Dr. Stephen Simpson, who is our guest this week. Dr. Simpson is a professor and interim director of the Division of Pulmonary Disease and Critical Care Medicine at the University of Kansas. Welcome, Dr. Simpson.
Thank you, Joe.
I've characterized your editorial as a dissent. Would you agree with that characterization?
I think it's probably fair to say there's some dissent in there, yes, sir.
Can you give us like the elevator summary of the basis for your dissent from the new definitions?
Sure. The thing that we think one has to be careful about in terms of accepting these new definitions is that they were based upon a very sophisticated retrospective analysis of some very large databases to come up with a definition of sepsis that is most specific for mortality, meaning the goal was to find a set of sepsis criteria that was the best predictor that someone was either going to spend more than 3 days in an ICU or was going to die from this particular set of clinical findings. So in order to preface for just a second, you should know that I have spent the last decade traveling around my state, putting 25 to 30,000 miles on my car, training people to recognize sepsis early and to treat it aggressively and early. So our concern with the new definition is that temporally, looking for a set of criteria that is more predictive of mortality actually may cause people, especially people who are not sepsis experts, to wait until these more severe criteria are met before they initiate the care of a patient with a severe life-threatening infection.
You seem to be saying that the gains in specificity that the new definitions afford are paid for by a lower sensitivity. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's very close to right. And actually, as I look very carefully at this, both of these tests are rather sensitive for mortality. Again, mm-hmm. mortality as being the outcome that the authors were interested in defining. So the sensitivity of infection plus SIRS, which is what they tested, versus the new infection plus SOFA criteria is more or less the same. Our real concern is not that the sensitivity, sensitivity is another way of saying true positive rate. In other mm-hmm. words, if this test is present, if these criteria are present, it is an indicator that mortality is going to happen. Okay, mm-hmm. So the true positive rate of both tests is about the same. However, we believe, most of us who work in sepsis believe that the infection plus SIRS in most cases of sepsis precedes the onset of the organ dysfunction that one finds with what we used to call severe sepsis and what the JAMA article now calls sepsis.
As I was reading the new definitions and the editorial surrounding it and looking through the papers that were supporting the definition, I got the sense that these and that the editorialist for JAMA also saw these basically as epidemiological tools, so that in the course of defining, in a large population, how many of these people had sepsis, then you could do that more accurately because of they compared the area under the operator receiving curve for the various approaches. And you mentioned SIRS, which for people I can't imagine the clinicians won't know what SIRS is, but I will tell them, which that is systemic inflammatory response syndrome. In the definitional paper, they say that SIRS, and maybe the editorial as well, they say that SIRS is often present without sepsis, but you're arguing, and I hear you, that you don't want to wait until you get a deflection in the SOFA score of 2, because that means that the patient could very well be on their way out. So do you fear that the rush to adopt these inappropriately would translate to clinical use, which would mean don't look so much for SIRS, but look for these changes in SOFA score, which you point out in your editorial are not in wide use?
Correct. You have summarized it very nicely. I believe that we have to look very carefully still for signs and symptoms of infection, and for symptoms of infection that indicate that it's more than a minor infection. And I think, honestly, in the last 2.5 decades, we have clearly demonstrated that infection plus SIRS is a serious infection. Even the authors in Dr. Seymour's paper about assessment of clinical criteria in JAMA, one of this trio of papers, even those authors would have to recognize that, yes, infection plus SIRS is quite frequently associated with mortality. So it is an important entity. So I think the point that I make is that some infections are very minor. For example, cuts and scrapes clearly represent a very minor type of infection that cause no systemic symptoms whatsoever. Some infections are more severe and cause such things as tachycardia, tachypnea, high white count, and fever. And that's a system-wide manifestation of the severity of the infection. And then the most severe infections, of course, cause organs to dysfunction. And I think we have no particular problem with the definition of sepsis as life-threatening organ dysfunction, as the authors have stated. My real problem is this, that it's clear that infection plus SIRS is a severe infection. I believe this, that the language that we use to describe a particular condition conditions the way that we think about that condition. And the way we think about it determines how we act upon it. So what we have done is removed the combination infection plus SIRS from the sepsis lexicon, if you will. So it is now just infection. When it becomes just infection, the sense of urgency, I am certain, will dissipate over time. There will no longer be a reason, unless we push for a reason, there will no longer be a reason for people to believe I need my antibiotics rapidly, and perhaps I need fluids rapidly.
You said that the SOFA scores are not in wide use except within academic centers. Do you think that you said that you've burned about 30,000 miles in your car's engine trying to get people to appreciate earlier when the sepsis exists. Do you think that the SOFA score, or there are two questions here. The SOFA score, is that useful, or is the QSOFA or quick SOFA score, which is tachypnea, as you said, and a decreased systolic pressure. Do you think that either of those two, if introduced to routine clinical practice outside of academic centers, would be useful?
Yeah, I actually think that these scores are both useful. What the authors are saying with the quick SOFA is they understand that the SOFA per se is rather unwieldy. It's a 5x4 box of different criteria you have to remember for different severities of illness for different organs, and that's not going to be easy. So to their credit, they did look for something simpler to use and find the Q SOFA. And frankly, I see nothing wrong with either of those two things, but the sofa itself is not, as I say, in common use. And we know that even when there is a clear cut, definitely needs to be done change in medicine, that the average duration for uptake is about 18 years, okay? And we are only just now in that 18-year framework for the previous definition of sepsis. And in fact, until about 2004, with the advent of the Surviving Sepsis Campaign, the general medical community probably paid no attention to sepsis, severe sepsis. It was mostly a thing thought of as what intensivists or critical care specialists use. With the Surviving Sepsis Campaign, starting in about 2004, we've tried to get this out to the broader medical community. And so really, we're only just over a decade into a change that we know is, historically, this is going to take another 8 to 10 years before.
Right, so you've got another 30,000 miles to put on your car at least before.
Indeed, I do.
I'm shocked to hear that it's that long. I had thought of it in terms of something like 7 or 8 years before guidelines are widely adopted, and maybe that will change now because there are measures of performance measures that clinicians are being held to account on.
Yeah.
But
yeah, that's entirely possible. Yes.
What do you wish to be the best outcome for this redefinition? What would you like to see happen?
Right. What I would like to see happen is the reincorporation of the notion that SIRS indicates a serious infection into the broader umbrella of sepsis. I think that we have purposefully removed it because of the perceived lack of specificity. And if you don't mind, I want to take a minute to talk about that perceived lack and whether you use this or not.
No, sure, go ahead.
The argument that's proposed fairly commonly is, look, if I climb a set of stairs, I get SIRS. I breathe fast and I get tachycardia. You know, if I watch a horror movie, I may get SIRS, okay? If I have a surgery, everyone post-surgery has SIRS. And therefore, this makes SIRS a worthless thing to look for in any instance, which I think is a rather simplistic view, I have to say. In point of fact, I look at it entirely the other way. SIRS is a natural response to physiologic stress. Your heart beats fast, you breathe fast, you may get a fever, your white count goes up. This is a response to physiologic stress. Climbing a set of stairs is a physiologic stress, pretty minor one. It goes away when you stop climbing the stairs. If you are lying on a bed or a gurney, and the physiologic stress that you have is infection, and I can look at you and see that that is the physiologic stress, it is incumbent upon me to try and take away that physiologic stress as soon as possible, because the SIRS is telling me that you are stressed and you are not in a good position physiologically. So what gives the specificity to the SIRS is when you can look at a patient and say, this guy has no reason for SIRS except that he's infected. Aha, this has meaning. As a matter of fact, we know that the mortality associated with that combination is somewhere between 5 and 16%, depending on the study that you look at. So I just don't take such a simplistic view of because other things can cause SIRS, SIRS is not useful. I would point out that the place where SIRS is most criticized is in the intensive care unit, where people already are sick, already do have tachypnea and tachycardia, and then you're trying to figure out, is this a new infection or not? And I will grant you, that is very difficult. Again, the issue remains that the suspected infection plus SIRS was never intended to be a simplistic, oh, SIRS is present, therefore I should suspect infection. Maybe yes, maybe no. the way Roger Bone, who I worked with, who developed this concept of SIRS, envisioned it is, oh, I have a patient who has shortness of breath, a cough, producing purulent sputum with blood streaks in it, pleuritic chest pain. This is the classic presentation of a lobar pneumonia. If I have a patient with that kind of syndrome and they have SIRS, this has some meaning. As opposed to every little time someone gets a fever, oh my gosh, I have to suspect the direst infection. I think what I'm saying is that there is a level of sophistication of thought that all doctors are capable of if they would indulge themselves.
if they have time to do so.
Time to do so.
All right, Dr. Simpson. Well, this is enlightening, and I want to thank you. You know, the authors of the definitions were encouraging this kind of discussion at the end. So you've certainly taken them up on that score with your dissent, and I want to thank you for spending time with us today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And by the way, I want to say that I respect and admire every single one of the authors of those papers. And in fact, some of them are friends of mine. So there is no animosity. We just have a different way of looking at things.
All right. Fair enough.
All right.
You've been listening to the 197th Clinical Conversation. The others are all available at podcasts.jwatch.org. I do appreciate your suggestions, and would you please send any to me at jelia@nejm.org. Clinical Conversations is a service of the NEJM Group. Kristen Kelly is our executive producer. Thanks so much for listening.